So, man is handicapped by so many inherent limitations. Still, there is a guiding hand, a help from above that helps him to exceed himself. And that is what the poet describes. His transience trembles with the eternal's touch. His barriers cede beneath the infinite's tread. At times, he is brittle, fleeting nature shakes at the touch of the eternal. The grace of God, some visit from above, he can't bear. So he trembles. And in consequence, the limitations which bar his growth, his progress towards God, they recede below the footstep of the infinite. They are pushed away. The immortals have their entries in his life. He is not all left alone, whether he is aware of it or not. The gods enter into his life now and then. The ambassadors of the unseen draw near. Ambassadors, because they bring a message from the unseen empire of God, and as they draw near, a splendor sullied by the mortal air along with them, they bring a splendor. And that splendor, Sri Aurobindo explains, is love, the divine love. Though when it touches the mortal air, it is diluted, it is to a certain extent dulled, it passes through his heart, a wandering guest. And it stays with him for a brief while, like a guest who has not come to stay, but who is moving and moving. And at that time, when love passes through his heart, beauty surrounds him for a magic hour. He is full of the sense of beauty. He appreciates beauty, he responds to beauty, and he is filled with the sense of the beautiful. But it is for a magic hour, for a brief while. He has visits of a large revealing joy, a joy, revealing joy, because it shows something which he has not seen earlier. And that joy may not stay all the while, but it visits him intermittently. Brief widenesses release him from himself. And during these hours, when there is love in his heart, beauty in his surroundings and joy in his being, he feels wide. They may be brief widenesses, But still, they release him from the narrowness to which he has accustomed himself all along. Brief widenesses release him from himself, enticing towards a glory ever in front. They call him to move in the front. There is a glory, he gets visions of glory, and he is tempted to move forward. Hopes of a deathless sweetness lure and leave. And how is he enticed? Because he is given hopes of a deathless sweetness, a sweetness that is not interrupted, a sweetness that is not terminated, but a permanent, constant sweetness. This hope lures him, tempts him, and then leaves. His mind is crossed by strange discovering fires, that is, intuitive flashes. He has flamings of intuitive suggestions, rare intimations lift his stumbling speech to a moment's kinship with the eternal world. Normally, man's speech is stumbling. It is not fluent because it is not sure of itself. But during these moments, there are some occasional intimations which elevate his speech to a momentary tuning with the eternal world. So what he says becomes true. What he says has power. A mask of wisdom circles through his brain. Mask of wisdom. Here, mask means a dramatic, semi-dramatic performance which characters do with masks on. It was popular some 4 centuries ago in England. So a mask is a kind of dance, part of a dramatic performance. And here he says, wisdom. There is a kind of a dance of wisdom circling through his brain, perturbing him with glimpses half divine. And during these flashes, he gets some glimpses of something which is though not divine, which is half divine. And it perturbs him, it shakes him out of his human immobility. He lays his hands sometimes on the unknown. He does not know what he is grasping. And his hands fall on what is unknown. He communes sometimes with eternity. In spite of himself, he speaks. He has exchange with eternity. A strange and grandiose symbol was his birth. The birth of man, the poet describes, was a strange and grandiose, not grand, but looking grand, pompous symbol, symbol of something. And immortality and spirit room, and pure perfection and a shadowless bliss are this afflicted creature's mighty fate. His birth is a symbol of something mighty waiting for him. His destiny is mighty and great. And what is that? Immortality is waiting for him. Spirit room, the house of the spirit is open to him. Pure perfection and shadowless bliss. Unlike bliss which always carries a shadow of suffering on earth, in the spirit room, his lot is a shadowless bliss. Are these afflicted creatures, this creature called man, who is shot through and through with imperfections and vitiating limitations. But here his fate is a great one. In him the earth mother sees draw near the change. The earth mother attaches importance to man because in him she sees the truth in her emerging, foreshadowed in her dumb and fiery depths. In the dumb and fiery depths of the earth mother, some great things are foreshadowed as sure to come. And change towards that, earth mother sees taking place in the creature called man. A godhead drawn from her transmuted limbs. Man, who is born of her, when his limbs are transmuted, he becomes a godhead, an alchemy of heaven on nature's base. Alchemy is changing base metal into gold. So heaven experiments in changing this creature called man into a godhead. And this experiment is done on the base of nature, earth. And now the Divine Mother addresses him. So long she has spoken of the general quality, the destination, the nature of man, the human being. And now she addresses Ashwapati directly and tells him, adept of the self-born unfailing line, that is what we call in Sanskrit parampara. There is a mighty tradition, unfailing line, it is continuous, of initiated people. He is an adept, initiate of that ancient line. Self-born, not born in the usual sense of any parents. Live not the light to die the ages poor. See, you are an adept. Don't live, abandon this light which the centuries and aeons have borne. Don't let that light die. Help still humanity's blind and suffering life. The prospects may look hopeless, but still, he says, the blind and suffering life of humanity, thou shalt help. Obey thy spirit's wide, omnipotent urge, that powerful, irresistible urge which comes from thyself. Obey. Don't let your reasoning mind weigh and pull you back, saying that it is not practical and things like that. Obey thy spirit's wide omnipotent urge. A witness. Now this urge, this is, he is describing that urge, omnipotent urge. A witness to God's parley with the night. God's negotiations with the night, darkness, to deliver that creature called man, so that the light may be born. And this urge has been a witness, so it is omnipotent, it is insistent, and it won't leave man, because it has been a witness to that negotiation between God and night. A witness to God's parley with the night, it leaned compassionate from immortal calm. That urge has bent down from its immortal calm out of compassion, and how's desire, the trouble, the troubled seed of things. That urge, it has housed itself in that movement called desire. And it is because of desire that man moves at all. He breaks his immobility, puts in effort. Whether the desire is for lower things or higher things, it is immaterial. Desire, he says, the troubled seed of things. It troubles, it disturbs, it doesn't allow you to stay quiet. And this omnipotent urge functions at the primitive level through desire. Later it turns into aspiration. Ascend to thy high self, tells him Ashwapati. Agree, carry out, obey. Ascend to thy high self, create, endure. In the process of creating, you have to endure a lot of suffering. Cease not from knowledge. Don't ever stop from questing for knowledge. Knowledge is always developing and growing. Let thy toil be vast. Don't cut your toil to suit the local situation. Let it be vast for the whole earth, for the whole race. No more in earthly limits pen thy force. Pen means constrict. Don't limit thy force within earthly boundaries. There are regions beyond the earth, so extend them. Equal thy work with long unending times. It is not enough if thy work is equal to human effort, highest human effort. It should equal unending times long effort. Traveler upon the bare eternal heights, he has now come up to that, tread still the difficult and endless path. The path is still going on. You have come to the eternal heights. Tread, march upon the difficult and endless path, the ancient path which had no beginning and which will have no end. Joining the cycles with its austere curve, the curve of the path, they join cycles after cycles, yugas and yugas, measured for man by the initiate gods. These cycles of time are measured by gods to suit the march of man at different stages. That is why this path joins these cycles which have been drawn by the initiate gods. The gods who are admitted to the secret wisdom of the Creator. And then he is, after telling him what he must do, she assures him, my light shall be in thee, my strength thy foe. Thy force will be constituted of my strength. Ask not the imperfect fruit, the partial prize. Don't ask for a fruit that is imperfect or a partial prize, like liberation, like nirvana, like mukti. Only one boon to greaten thy spirit demand. Ask from me only one boon to heighten, to elevate thy spirit. Only one joy to raise thy kind desire, to raise humanity, to raise the entire race. Desire that, that shall be thy joy. Above blind fate and the antagonist powers, we speak of fate, and we speak of fate that is blind, and the various hostile powers that are opposed to the reign of God, that are opposed to the progress of man. So she assures him, don't be afraid of fate, don't be afraid of the antagonist powers. Above blind fate and the antagonist powers, moveless there stands a high unchanging will. There is a high will that is immobile, that can't be changed, that can't be moved. To its omnipotence leave thy work's result. To work shall be thine, but leave the result to the omnipotence of that will, which is above fate, above the antagonist powers. When you leave that, she tells him, all things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. There is an hour in the calendar of God when all things, when everything shall be transformed. And in that hour alone, all things shall change. No agitation, no excitement, no fevered effort on anybody's part can hasten this hour. Leave it to thy will, that will, and in God's transfiguring hour, all things shall change. That is her answer to Ashwapati. To leave it to the divine will, to do what he has to do, and leave the results. He says, there is an hour, and in that hour things shall be fulfilled. August and sweet sang hush that mighty voice in the heart sang hush. Nothing now moved in the vast brooding space. A stillness came upon the listening world, a mute immensity of the eternal peace. When the voice got silent, there was this peace, there was this stillness. But Ashwapati's heart replied to her. Note again, it is not his mouth that speaks. She has spoken in his heart, and his heart speaks to her. A cry amid the silence of the vastitudes of existence. In that silence, his is heard as a cry. How shall I rest content with mortal days and the dull measure of terrestrial things? I who have seen behind the cosmic mask the glory and beauty of thy face. He asks her point blank. I have seen behind this cosmic mask thy face, the beauty of thy face and the glory of thy face. Now after beholding thy face, how can I rest content with our slow, moving, suffering, mortal days? And how shall I accept the dull measure of terrestrial things, when I have seen this glory, when I have seen this beauty, how can I reconcile myself to that dull measure of terrestrial things? Hard is the doom to which thou bindest thy sons. Indeed, he says, the doom to which thou bindest thy sons is hard. It is a little ironical. He says, you are binding us and our fate is hard. How long shall our spirits battle with the night? We have been doing so all along. How long shall our spirits battle with the night and bear defeat and the brute yoke of death? We who are vessels of a deathless force, we are not ordinary creatures. We are embodying, we are holding thy deathless force. And we who are builders of the Godhead to the race, all our work, all our effort is towards building Godhead to the race, to raise man unto a godhood. And how long shall we battle with the night? Oh, if it is thy work I do below, amid the error and waste of human life, in the vague light of man's half-conscious mind, why breaks not in some distant gleam of thee? If really I am doing thy work, why is it that amidst all this waste and error and half-consciousness, some distant gleam, a ray of thy light, why doesn't it break and show us the way? Ever the centuries and millenniums pass, centuries after centuries pass, where in the grayness is thy coming's ray? In that dull, vague air, where is the ray that betokens thy coming? Where is the thunder of thy victory's wings? Surely thou art going to bring victory. But the victory's wings have the thunder. We do not hear the thunder. Only we hear the feet of passing God. All that we hear is the tread of gods that just pass through our kingdom. They don't stay and work with us. They visit us. I think we will stop.